Welcome to Five Rounds Today, a very special edition of Five Rounds Today. John Ramdean and Robin Black on vacation. Cody Saftick and Paul Shaughnessy from Bookie Beatdown breaking down UFC 191. That just happened this past weekend from the MGM Grand Garden Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada. Obviously, in the main event, we had Demetrius Johnson completely dominating John Dodson for five rounds, basically pillar to post. It's one of those situations now that we go, okay, what's next for Demetrius Johnson? This guy is completely... We talk about guys running through divisions all the time. You hear guys like Conor McGregor, who, after one fight against Chad Mendes, thinks that he's almost run through the division. He's ready to go up to 155. But Demetrius Johnson has actually run through this division now. He's beaten Dodson twice. He's beaten Benavidez twice. He's beaten McCall twice. Or I guess there was the draw and then the win.
Yeah, technically speaking.
He's dominated against everybody. Now the only name that's probably available out there is still Henry Cejudo. A lot of people have questions whether he's even ready for this spot at this point in his career, really. There's not that many options. But let's break down the fight that he had there. It looked like it just from the get-go, the game plan that he had, stay in his face, stay active, don't let John Dodson have any space. And for five rounds, he was able to employ this. Even that one spot where Dodson kicked him to the groin, he was just like, no, Herb.
Not even that hurt me.
Let me do this. Let me keep moving forward. He didn't want to give John Dodson a second to breathe. And 100%, his strategy worked out. It's an interesting situation of where he goes here, but what were your thoughts on his performance?
Well, the thing is, like, on one hand, I don't mind the performance. You watch it, and it's I don't want to say perfection because you can always get better. Nothing in life is perfect, but that's basically the perfect performance. I mean, like, I did all the things I wanted to do to this guy, but as a result of you having your way, so to speak, with somebody, I can see why the fans don't like it. I can see why somebody at home is just like, I'm not really digging this fight. It's the same thing over and over and over again. It's like when you watch a Mayweather fight. The people that are Mayweather fans or the people that are really into boxing will tell you, well, that was a beautiful fight. He took no damage. I mean, he didn't take many risks, but he took no damage. Demetrius Johnson, I mean, he does take risks, but he takes them so efficiently. He dodges punches so well. He moves out of the way so well. His, like, shot, his takedown setups, it's just, like, so unbelievably gorgeous.
Yeah.
People just don't really seem to appreciate it all that much. So, on one hand, I thought it was a decent fight. On the other hand, it's like you said, he's got to move up. And that's a crazy thing to say because you're the best guy in the world at 125 pounds. And this isn't boxing. They're not saying move up a couple pounds and it's a weight class. It's like, I got to move up a full 10 pounds and I got to fight guys that are just that much bigger than me. I mean, we've seen Demetrius Johnson fight at 135. And yes, he had some success. But don't get me wrong, he was always the smallest guy. I mean, he's very small in comparison. Now at flyweight, when he matches up against like John Dodson, they're the same size. Really, there's no small fighter here. So I don't mind him going back up to 135. And I only say that because, I mean, really, what else is he going to do at 125? You mentioned Henry Cejudo, but Henry Cejudo first has got to get by UCR for me. I mean, so who knows if he's even ready? And I mean, he's looked good, but he hasn't looked like, oh my God, I gotta see this fight. And then with Ali Bogatinov, he's fighting Joseph Benavidez, so you know, maybe the winner of that fight. But we've already seen
both
exactly.
Of them.
So now if you're Demetrius Johnson, it's like, okay, I need to move up to 135. What makes sense? Well, an immediate title shot with TJ Dillashaw, that does make sense only because we watched that press conference for the UFC the other day, and they have everybody up on the stage. And everybody's got these fights, or they got these announced fights. And then you got TJ Dillashaw, and he's the one guy that's like, I don't have a fight announced because I'm in a similar situation that I don't really have anybody to fight. I mean, I could fight Rafael Assuncao, but he's hurt. There's not really a next challenger in line. So a guy like Demetrius Johnson could, or he fights Henan Barão. And if he beats Henan Barão, he beat the former champ. He beat a guy that's technically like a number one contender, so to speak, I guess. And then he gets the fight.
That bantamweight division, though, the fight that they've been trying to make and unfortunately, Dominick Cruz keeps getting injured.
That's a big problem.
It's basically trying to unify the belt there. I know that TJ Dillashaw has the legit strap at this point, but everybody wants to see whether TJ Dillashaw can beat Dominick Cruz, and then we can kind of crown the real champion at 135 pounds. But until that fight happens, I feel as though you kind of don't want to bring Johnson up into this division. Because the real question is Dillashaw versus Cruz, and you've got the Alliance versus Alpha Male rivalry and yada, yada, yada.
Fair enough, right? But now you've got two stagnant divisions. You got 125 that there's just very little interest in it, and you got 135, which there's very little interest in it. Why not spice up both of them? And I know what you mean, right? If you put Demetrius Johnson in and you match him up with a Mitch Gagnon, you're like, okay, he's going to have a, you know, an easy tune-up fight, and then we'll see how he adapts. Well, if he loses, you just blew your flyweight division, like, right open. So it makes sense to give him a Hendon Burrell, because if he loses, it's like, oh, well, Hendon Burrell's awesome. Hendon Burrell's a former 135-pound champ. It's totally fine. He can go back to 125, name, reputation, none of that scarred. He'll be okay. Flip side to that, if he beats a Hendon Burrell, then it's like, damn, I really want to see this guy continue at 135. Then the fight with Cruz would be on the table. A rematch with Cruz would be on the table. The fight with Dillashaw would be on the table. If Cruz can Dillashaw, they can pair up and fight. That would be perfect scenario, but I just don't see it happening. I mean, how many times do they match them up only for something to happen? I mean, we can't set ourselves up for a letdown here, right?
Mm-hmm. I was almost half expecting in that post-fight press conference that John Lineker, after his win over Francisco Rivera, would say, Hey, Uncle Dana, can I go back down to 125? You know, I think I'm going to take it seriously. Kind of like Cejudo after he had to go up to 135, come back down to 125. But he didn't really have any sort of interest in that. He said, no, 135 is my division for right now. I can make 135 really easily. And then he's like, I'm not saying that 125 is never going to happen, but, you know, I'm at 135 for now. So that was another option of somebody who, if he could actually make the weight, and he's proven by missing four times that he really can't. That is another option, but he doesn't seem ready to make that move.
If I'm Lineker, I'm thinking this is a brilliant idea, right? Because it's like, you know what? I didn't do that well. Or I didn't do that bad at bantamweight, sorry. I mean, Francisco Rivera, he's a total banger, and it was a crazy fight. Got the extra 50 G's from my pocket. I'm going to stay at 35. I'm gonna kick it here. I'd like to go back to 125, but the time's not right. I'll tell you when the time's right. The time is right when Demetrius Johnson decides to leave, and then when he comes up to 35, you go back down, right? Mm-hmm. Because I think if you analyze the fight, it's like, what could Lineker do to Demetrius Johnson? He's good. He's a power puncher. He is way too slow to catch Demetrius Johnson. Mm-hmm. And Demetrius Johnson's not a fool. He would never fight you like Francisco Rivera. Like, the second that you swung one, he would dump you on your back so fast. So it's just not a good fight for Lineker. But I mean, a guy like John Lineker, if he wants to go back to 125, I'd love to see him against a guy like Dodson. For Dodson, I'd like to see him either fight the winner of Formiga versus Henry Cejudo, depending on the outcome, or maybe the Benavidez versus Ali Bogatinov. He's still a top guy.
That's what you do in that spot, eh? You'd put Cejudo up against John Dodson?
Well, it just depends what Demetrius
Johnson
wants to do here.
That just seems like you'd potentially be killing a contender.
I don't really see Cejudo as a contender, only because I haven't been overly impressed in these performances. Yeah. He hasn't finished anybody.
But who else? You have Formiga as well, who hasn't had a shot at the strap, and Cejudo.
Well, Formiga,
but really, let's be honest.
Sure, but Formiga got smoked out by John Dodson.
I imagine that's the number one contender fight at this point.
It's up in the air, and that's why a guy like John Dodson is going to be important to this division, because he's fought a lot of these guys on one hand, and on the other hand, I mean, you got Demetrius Johnson, who's more or less cleaned up the division. A guy like Formiga, maybe he could get the next shot. So if he chokes out Henry Cejudo in the first round, then that's the fight to make. Don't get me wrong. But if this fight's just the worst fight ever, if it's Henry Cejudo trying to hold on and Formiga trying to choke him out, and it's just a really bad fight, then there's going to be no interest there for this fight to happen between Demetrius Johnson. People want to see something competitive. And that's where John Lineker's at least got that ace in his back pocket. It's that when you fight John Lineker, at least there's a chance that he knocks you out, right? Mm-hmm. So if he fights Demetrius Johnson, it's like, you know what? Maybe, just maybe, he's going to clip him and put it down. We've seen him get dropped before. It's possible. When you got Henry Cejudo against Demetrius Johnson, how is he going to win the fight? He needs to grind it out the five rounds because he does not finish opponents. Let's get that out of the way right now. Henry Cejudo is not going to finish him. I just don't see it happening. So
He has a great wrestling pedigree against a guy who just turned into such an amazing MMA wrestler that...
MMA wrestling's a real thing, man. Difference in between the two.
We see Demetrius Johnson's setups. We were talking about it during that fight. His ability to get into your hips is just so incredibly quickly. A lot of people aren't able to watch it and appreciate what he's doing there. And actually, Dodson looked great in his takedown defense, being able to pop up all the time, because, let's be honest, there's not many guys in that division that would be able to stop that shot. And especially, we go back to a guy like Lineker, if he ever did come back down to 125, he's like, I don't think he's going to be able to stop that takedown. And I think Johnson's going to be able to hang out on top of him. Now, Lineker's got a nice little guillotine, but...
Well, we'll get to Lineker.
Would he ever catch him
there?
We will talk about Lineker later on down in the show here.
So, I mean, I think we can agree if Demetrius Johnson wants to go up to 35, there's interesting fights. If not, yes, Henry Cejudo versus Formiga. If one of them has a good performance, then that's it. With Bogatinov, he's far off the map. So even if he knocks out Benavidez in the first round, still don't want to see it. Him versus Dodson might be fun.
All right, coming up on five rounds today, we'll break down the rest of the main card prelims. Basically, we're breaking down everything that went down at UFC 191, and eventually we'll get to the Go Big press conference that was held down in Las Vegas, Nevada, so stay close. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. Paul Shaughnessy and Cody Saftick filling in for John Ramsey and Robin Black here. And we move on to the heavyweight division where there's some controversy brewing here. We've got Andrei Arlovsky versus Frank Mir. I had money. I'm a gambler. If you guys have ever watched our show, Bookie Beatdown, before, me and Cody break down the fights leading into it. John
and we both took Frank Mir.
John and Robin typically, break them down afterwards as well. We both have Frank Mir. I thought Frank Mir won. And, looking on Twitter and all through, like, everybody else, there's a lot of people who are pretty disappointed with this decision. It was a pretty close fight, but there was a 30-27 Andrei Arlovsky that doesn't make any sense. I don't know where you would have to be, obviously not in the arena actually watching the fight, to give that second round to Andrei Arlovsky is complete, malpractice, basically. That person should be checked out. Have their eyes checked out because they weren't seeing the right fight. He got dropped in that round, and Frank Mir actually kind of screwed himself over by aggressively attacking that Kimura.
Yeah.
And Andrei Arlovsky was able to get back up. But I don't think that was the definitive point of that round. I can see 29-28 Andrei Arlovsky, but 30-27 was complete madness. Actually, when Bruce Buffer was announcing, a unanimous decision, I was going, okay, well, Frank's got this, because you can't give that second round to Andrei Arlovsky. But I had Andrei Arlovsky round one, and I gave Mir rounds two and three.
What about you? I'm going to take the unpopular opinion here, and I don't think it was 30-27, but I'll attempt to at least defend it a little bit here. I also had Mir, so it was obviously I wanted him to win the fight. However, he'd lost this fight. I do believe that. I mean, first of all, you start with that first round, and it was a very close first round. Don't get me wrong. Both guys have a lot of back and forth. And here's the thing, right? I thought Frank Mir won that first round. He controls him against the cage. That's basically where he does his best round. When they're physically exchanging in front of each other, I think he slips the shots better. I think he's defending better. I think he's landing his punches better. And like I said, whenever he gets in maybe a little bit of trouble or whenever they clinch up, he moves Arlovsky back to the fence where he holds him there. So I thought it was a Frank Mir first round. Now you got the second round. Honestly, it's a takedown right off the bat. Like, literally, the second round starts, and Frank Mir immediately hits him with a good single leg. But he works really hard for that single leg. And the rest of the round, he's staying on Andrei Arlovsky, and he's not hurting Andrei Arlovsky, but at least he's controlling him. But the second Andrei Arlovsky gets back up to his feet, Frank Mir is a different Frank Mir. Because at this point, he is gassed out. And that's really where he let me down here. He worked hard on the single leg, but that's not the point. This is a veteran of the sport. This is a guy that's been around for a long time. And at 36 years old and a heavyweight, you have to expect that he's going to fatigue. But I thought that his veteranship would allow him to get around a little bit better. But that second round, when he gets up, he's tired. And Arlovsky's now landing the shots. So that second round could, for all I know, be an Andrei Arlovsky round. And in fact, when I rewatched it, I scored the second round for Andrei Arlovsky. Now you've got the third round. And the third round is where Frank Mir drops him. So this should definitely be Frank Mir's round. But when you watch the shot, it appears to get the side of Arlovsky's head. And Arlovsky's turning. And he more or less just falls over. It's almost like a club. Like, Mir's shot misses, but the momentum of his arm swings Arlovsky to the ground. So there's two ways of looking at this round. If you look at this round and you think, yo, he just got dropped, undoubtedly it's a Frank Mir round. If you support the opinion of, I don't think he got dropped, I think he more or less just slipped to the ground, and then shortly thereafter, he does get back up. Mm-hmm. And when he does get back up, he's the fresher fighter, he's the faster fighter, he's more aggressive. I scored that third round for Andrei Arlovsky as well. So I had first round Frank Mir, second round Andrei Arlovsky, third round Andrei Arlovsky, and therefore, I didn't really care that he lost the fight. The 30-27 was weird to me, but round one was also very close. So if for some reason you had one round Andrei Arlovsky, you have two and three Arlovsky, then that's where the 30-27 comes from. So, like I said, I had a 29-28 personally. And then MMADecisions.com, which as we're a big fan of that site, they'll go and they'll get all the members of the media and they'll get everybody scoring and put them together. They had it 12-3 for Andrei Arlovsky out of the 15 people. So maybe Twitter was against it, but Twitter tends to be the people that have lost money.
The Twitter that I am in is MMA gambling Twitter as well. So you have a bunch of people just thinking that they got completely robbed. I didn't think it was a robbery. I thought the 30-27 was weird, but I wasn't shocked that Andrei Arlovsky came away with the win. It was a pretty close fight and a couple swing rounds there. So the interesting thing about this, though, is this was kind of a fight that was, two guys, career resurgences. We're almost looking a little bit ahead, but we were thinking, Arlovsky has a win over the current champion, Fabricio Werdum. I don't know if either guy really came away shining off of this performance. Andrei Arlovsky wasn't even impressed with his own performance. He said that he was really tired and that he kind of alluded to the fact that maybe he kind of overlooked Frank Mir in this fight. You have Junior Dos Santos and you have Alistair Overeem going down at, I guess, UFC on Fox 17 or whatever. So maybe the winner of that faces Arlovsky. That's, you know, you could have a little rematch between, or not rematch, but you could have Arlovsky versus JDS. I'm down for that. Anything in this heavyweight division is exciting, but I don't think Andrei Arlovsky is, you know, pushed himself forward to a title shot off of a performance like that.
No, definitely not. And I know there was a lot of criticism about how bad the fight was. I didn't think it was all that bad, to be honest. Maybe I just like fighting so much, but I thought it was an entertaining fight enough that I wouldn't complain about it. And I know a lot of people didn't like it. And maybe that's because you're coming off this super sweet Anthony Johnson fight that you're like, I want that again. And you're expecting that because you got two heavyweights. Both are coming off sweet knockout wins in their last two performances each. Both guys at 36. Both guys got awful chins. Did the expectation for this to be the fight of the decade, mm-hmm. the expectation for this to be a first-round knockout or a second-round knockout or something terrific, it was so high that that's why people were like, I'm let down. If you judge this fight as just a fight that you saw at a bar, you'd have been like, man, that was crazy last night. But to your point, Andrei Arlovsky, I feel bad for him at this point because had he had a huge performance, maybe that would have leapfrogged him. And like you said, because it was just an okay performance, now it's like, who do I fight next? I need one more before I get that title shot. And I looked really quick at the heavyweight, well, my heavyweight rankings. And if you look at it, you got Cain Velasquez, who's probably going to rematch Fabricio Werdum. So that's off the table, more or less.
Yeah, and that's not going to happen until, like, Super Bowl weekend. So.
Exactly. Then you got JDS, but he's already got a dance partner in Alistair Overeem. So mm-hmm. how long do you got to wait for that? And you're 36 years old. You don't want to wait too long. Then you got Stipe Miocic, but he's already fighting Ben Rothwell. Then you got Mark Hunt, potentially. That'd be fun, Arlovsky Marcon, but he's fighting Bigfoot. Then you got Josh Barnett, but he's fighting Roy Nelson. Literally, the only guy that's available is Travis Brown, who he's already beaten. Below mm-hmm. that is Frank Mir, who he just beat. And the other guy ranked below that is Matt Mitrione. And nobody wants to see Andrei Arlovsky versus Matt Mitrione. So basically,
Mitrione's been asking
nothing.
For that fight for so long, though, at this point.
Sure,
but it really doesn't
Arlovsky,
actually make any
nothing.
Sense.
It does nothing for you for Andrei Arlovsky. And so if you're Arlovsky, you're like, okay, all the top guys are all booked up here. So what makes sense for me? Two things would make sense. The Fedor fight would make a lot of sense. If Fedor is going to announce his signing in 2 to 3 weeks, if he does sign with the UFC, he's also has no dance partner. Clearly, all the other guys are locked up. And it's a rematch we're seeing. And if they can't get Arlovsky, if they can't get Fedor Emelianenko, maybe the Krokop fight makes sense, right? Krokop not really ranked like the other guys.
But he's got a name.
And Styles make fights. He has a name. If he gets through Anthony Hamilton in South Korea, so, like, he's got a fight as well. But yeah. Anthony Hamilton, come on, give me a break. That makes up.
All right, let's move on to the light heavyweight division where we've got Anthony Johnson gets a second round KO win over Jimmy Poster Boy Manoa. Johnson kind of seemed like a guy on a mission in that first round where he's like, I want to work on some of my wrestling. I want to utilize my grappling skills. He knows what happened against Daniel Cormier's last fight. He got completely dominated in that realm. So obviously this was an important thing for him to, you know, test some things out and work on some things. And then the second round, some people were saying that was a bad stoppage by Jason Herzog. I thought it was a great stoppage. It was only going to get uglier from there. You know, Jimmy Manoa, kind of his eyes kind of went back on the initial punch, and then he took a few shots on the ground. So good stoppage by Jason Herzog. Anthony Johnson, after the fight, I suppose that's almost the biggest newsmaker out of this whole thing, is he had some harsh words for people in press row, saying, you know, stop, you know, worrying about my personal life, yada yada yada. Is this the right move for him? Like it almost leads me to believe that when you do something like that, people are gonna continue to find those little things that you don't want to talk about. It's like a kid in a kid being told by his parents to you know, don't do this, don't do that, don't go drinking. It's like they're gonna continue to come after him for all the stuff that went on around his fight.
That's just the world we live in. I mean, the negative press is always going to kind of outweigh the positive press. And a guy like Anthony Johnson, I'm sure he's a good guy. But, yeah, when these stories come out about you know, there's this dog kennel, these stories come out about this yoga mat incident at the gym, or the stories come out with, you know, whatever the domestic abuse charges on him. I don't want to get into that. But it always seems like it's negative press with the guy, negative press. The only positive press he does is when the guy fights, because, man, that was a fantastic performance. I mean, speaking strictly on the actual performance, I mean, yeah, that first round, that was all him. Physically, he looked fantastic. He looked really fast. He looked, I don't know if his cardio would have held up because it happened so fast, but it certainly looked like it was well on its way to holding up. And if you watch the countdown special, I mean, it looked like he put a lot of work in. It looked like he more or less tried to reinvent himself. And where I believe he's a one-trick pony with his power punching, his wrestling looked good. Now, flip side to that, Jimmy Manoa, not exactly the best takedown defense. No. And I felt bad for Jimmy Manoa because he was in a situation. He learned right away in that second round. He was in a situation where it was like, I can't physically stand with this guy because he's just a better striker than me. He's throwing some mad heat, and he's not going anywhere. And I'm not strong enough to take him down, nor am I a good enough wrestler to take him down. So if I can't take him down and I can't stand with him, it's just a matter of time. And that's exactly what it was. It was a matter of time. Where does Anthony Johnson go for this? You would assume a title shot. You would assume that Daniel Cormier versus Alexander Gustafsson, whoever wins that, if Jones isn't back, then it makes sense. If Jones comes back, then he'll challenge for that. Johnson can fight the loser of that fight, or Johnson can fight somebody within that pairing, but he's far too good to fight the other light heavyweights. Mm-hmm. Light heavyweights isn't a great division, so if you're Johnson, maybe you want a money fight just to get a quick buck, but to be honest, it's title shot or nothing for this guy.
Yeah, he's kind of in a realm of his own right now, and you have other guys in that division that are tough, like Rashad Evans, but they're teammates. That's not going to happen, so a little bit of a strange thing. He's almost going to have to wait, play a little wait-and-see game until he's got a suitable opponent. But he said he wanted to get back on the horse if somebody dropped out of an upcoming fight. Say if Rashad dropped out and he wants to go up against Bader, I'm sure he would be down for that. Coming up, me and Cody will break down the rest of the main card of UFC 191. If you're sick of us already, John and Robin will be back next Monday for 5 rounds. Welcome back to 5 Rounds Today. Paul Shaughnessy and Cody Saftick here with you. Right off we go to the light heavyweight division where we had Corey Anderson taking on Jan Błachowicz. Corey Anderson, we kind of overlooked this guy going into this fight. We said that the possibility was there. This guy's a really good wrestler. He's really green, lots of skills, but we saw in his fight against Jean Valente that maybe his ability to take a punch was a little bit in question. Well, he didn't have to take any punches in this because he dominated Jan Błachowicz, taking him down. Jan Błachowicz looked exhausted the entirety of the fight. Two judges scored this 30-25, and even if you go on MMADecisions.com, a lot of people giving the 30-25s for two of those rounds as well. Corey Anderson, big win for him. Kind of puts himself back in a spot. He almost, after that loss to Jean Valente, it's always like this in mixed martial arts. Sometimes we're really hard on these guys. It's like he loses to Jean Valente, and we're like, well, he's a busted prospect. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, he's now moved on to Ricardo Almeida's camp, and he's got a bunch of good people there. Seems to be a good fit for him coming off of this fight. Stuck to his game plan, dominated with his game plan, and really took Jan Błachowicz out of the fight from the get-go.
That's exactly it. I didn't have it 30-25. I could see 30-25, but yeah. I did have it 30-26 with that second round being the 10-8. Mm-hmm. I mean, round one, relatively competitive. In fact, I think one of the judges even gave it for Błachowicz. A few people gave it for Błachowicz. And you see right away where Corey Anderson is not exactly a refined striker yet. His head's kind of straight up. He takes a couple decent shots in the early going. But the second he gets that takedown, then you realize, like, oh, Błachowicz doesn't really have anything off his back. He goes for an armbar at the end of the round, but that's about it. Round two, now Corey Anderson knows he's got nothing off his back. The takedown was somewhat difficult to get, but I know I can get more of these. Gets it, and that's when Błachowicz realized, like you said, exhausted. There's very few guys that I've seen get that tired in a fight that weren't heavyweights. He's like light heavyweight, don't get me wrong, but he was completely exhausted. In that second round, he was not moving. He was physically sitting there. And then as a result, he got completely pounded. I mean, elbow after elbow from Corey Anderson. And if eating on me elbows doesn't cause you to be like, I need to get up, there's something wrong. And it wasn't that he was quitting on himself. It was that he physically did not have the energy to try to get up. Third round, same thing. I thought he caught a bit of a second win in the third round, which is why I didn't have a 10-8. He, you know, tried to defend himself. He did get back up at the end of the third round. But, man, with Corey Anderson, he completely ran train. And I'm going to apologize because Jan Blachowicz, if you watch Bookie Beatdown, I said that was my pick of the week. I thought that was somebody who's going to be able to defend the takedowns. He's going to be able to hurt Corey Anderson's standing. And that just never happened. But something really important to note on Corey Anderson is that he's 25 years old and that he was 5-1 going into this fight. 5-1. There's no doubt the UFC was probably throwing him to the lions. They're saying, listen, Blachowicz has a huge fan base in Poland. He's a very likable fighter. He's an entertainer. If he goes out there and he knocks Corey Anderson out, then there's big fights for Blachowicz down the road. He matches up good with some guys. Corey Anderson, he's a busted prospect, as we mentioned. But now it's a flip of the reverse. Now you've got Blachowicz. It's like, where does he go from here? No idea. This is a hurting situation. I'd like to see him against someone like Rampage Jackson or Shogun Hua, guys that are basically at his level, and they'll probably just stand and bang. Corey Anderson, meanwhile, he moves up the rankings quite a bit with this, and he's still green, but as we mentioned, he's going to keep getting better and better from here. So someone that we slept on, and unfortunately, he had a pretty good performance. So
a green prospect that we didn't sleep on was Paige Van Zandt. Now that being said, from
nobody
a betting from a betting perspective, the line was completely out of line. And even right now, as I say this today, even with her getting a finish in the third round by armbar, where she looked great, don't get me wrong, but the -1600 odds was completely ludicrous. Across the board, Paige Van Zandt is one of those people who every single fight she's getting better. I wonder what the UFC is going to do with her, though. Are they going to rush her into a title shot in a division that is, let's be honest, like Valerie Letourneau just got a title shot because really there wasn't many other options with Claudia Della hurt. They need to keep Joanna Jędrzejczyk moving here. Is Paige Van Zandt going to win like one, maybe two more fights, and she's going to be in line for that title? I don't think she's going to be ready at that point.
Yeah, I don't think she's going to be ready, and I don't think that's the plan for her. I think from the moment that she debuted in the organization, her toughest fight, probably her first fight against Kylie Curran, because at the time I was picking Curran, and Curran was a highly touted prospect, out of Reign MMA. Like, she had some hype behind her, so to speak. Paige Van Zandt stole that hype, and then right after that, I was like, okay, we've got something special here. She's noticeably getting better. Every time she comes out, she is noticeably better than her last performance, so why not let her grow? She's 21, 22 years old. She's going to keep getting better from here. She's at a good gym. She seems to be very focused. She's taking things very seriously for herself. I'd like to see her continue on that path. And, I mean, when I looked at the rankings, I was like, where could she logistically go from here? Basically, all the people that are ranked higher than her are pretty good. I mean, they're all really good. What would you rather – would you like to see her fight Jessica Penne? It's like, no, not at all. Jessica Penne's leaps and bounds better than her. Well, who are people that are ranked below her? Ronda Marcos? Would you like to see that fight? No, not really. I'd like to see her get better and then fight some of those people. And when I looked at it, it was like, well, who could she fight? And what you're left with is the winner of Angela Hill versus Rose Namajunas, which is a good fight because Angela Hill, very, very green. Rose clearly has holes in her game plan that can be exploited. And Paige Van Zandt's a pretty good matchup, actually, against Rose Namajunas. They're both big-name fighters, and talk about a pretty matchup. I mean, let's talk about that. Paige Van Zandt versus Rose Namajunas, sign Cody Saffick up.
Teen Vogue will be all over that one.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic times. And like I said, they're still good fights. Besides that, maybe she takes a poke at Marina Moroz, but once again, I don't think that's a great idea.
But eventually, this all comes down to it. You have to basically feed her to the lions at some point because she can't continue to be in the top 10.
Yes, but I'd like to see her slowly fight just like – you can't go from Alex Chambers and Felice Herrig to the upper echelon of the division because, let's face it, those are just not upper echelon fighters. I mean, Alex Chambers would have never been in the situation had she not pulled out a fluke armbar in a fight she was getting dominated.
100%.
And Felice Herrig, I mean, we've talked – you and I have talked about this for a long time. It's just this is not UFC caliber. It's not UFC caliber whatsoever. And so you go decision with this girl. So I thought the 10-8 the second round was actually 10-8 for Paige Van Zandt. So as I mentioned, she did have a strong performance, but I don't want them to just be like – here's a top five girl. I'd like to see them slowly build her up. If they want to sign talent from outside the UFC and bring them in and then be like, oh, this is a Swedish prospect with a 4-0, 5-0 record or a five-fight winning streak, then you can sell that stuff. Some of these girls in the UFC, she'll be able to beat them in time. Don't get me wrong. She is getting better. But a 22-year-old Paige Van Zandt is not half the fighter that a 25-year-old Paige Van Zandt is. And I'd like to see her maybe get those opportunities a little more down the road. Season up a little bit.
All right, coming up, Cody and I will break down the prelims of UFC 191, so stay close. Welcome back to 5 Rounds Today. Paul Shaughnessy and Cody Saftik here with you. All right, and we move into the prelims portion where we had Ross Pearson taking a split decision win over Paul Felder. I thought Ross Pearson did enough to he should have probably gotten a unanimous decision in this fight. Definitely a fun fight. One that Ross Pearson said, me and this guy, we're going to fight. You know, we're going to probably have a trilogy or something like that. I don't know. Maybe we should pump the brakes on this. It was a fun fight. Paul Felder was really, really upset, as Paul Felder, after a loss, is known to do. He kind of did his last little spinning attempt as he pulled his hand out of the referee's hand. Interesting fight. Felder, you almost start to beg the question. It's like, you got really battered by Edson Barboza. Like, you had your legs kicked in pretty hard in that fight. Both of these guys were coming off of relative short notice, I suppose, but Felder didn't really ever really quite get into the game plan that he wanted here. Ross Pearson, good on him. He was able to keep his range, you know, kind of more of a traditional stand-up style, kind of pick his shots, get in, get out. And then he even took Felder down at one point in the fight as well. So a great win for Ross Pearson, a guy who really needed to get back on track here. Really what I'm questioning out of this, though, is did we all overrate Paul Felder, or was maybe he wasn't ready for this performance? He hangs out with Donald Cerrone, says, oh, I'm just going to take whatever fight, and maybe this is a situation where he should have just maybe take some time off, recruit, refresh, and all of that.
Well, we talked about going into this fight. That was Paul Felder was coming out of a war in which he lost, mm-hmm. and Ross Pearson was coming out of completely getting ridden like a pony, mm-hmm. and lost. But he took no damage in that fight against Evan Dunham. So coming in, I mean, if there was a question of which guy's fresher, then it would have been Ross Pearson. First round's close, obviously. A lot of people give first round to Paul Felder. That was like the Paul Felder round. But I thought that takedown at the end was what sealed it for Ross Pearson. So I saw on MMADecisions.com that actually a couple people anyways gave Ross Pearson 30-27. And I don't think that's crazy. I think I didn't give him 30-27. I thought he lost the second round and won the third round. But I'm proud of Ross Pearson because he's at a career cross what path here, right? You're really highly ranked. You're smoking guys. Oh, Ally Quinta, you know, busts you and you're off the map. You're back on track. You beat Sam Stout. Oh, you know, you just got clowned by Evan Dunham. He needed this win huge, man. He just lost to a wrestler and proved I'm not the greatest grappler. If he loses to a striker now and proves I'm not the greatest striker, then what are you, man? You're a mid-pack guy, middling pack in the road. So this is a very important fight for him. And he treated it as such. He went out. In the first round, he knew it wasn't really going his way, but he got that takedown because that was something that he needed to do. Second round, it did not go his way. I thought he lost the second round. His coaches might have been telling him, listen, Ross, it's probably 1-1 here. Mm-hmm. And what does he do in the third round? Felder does his, I don't want to say lackadaisical, but Felder stands up straight, and he doesn't really go for it, right? He did kind of in the second round, but not in the third. Ross Pearson knew he needed that round. He went for it. He won the round. Good on Ross Pearson. I thought he did win the fight. I thought it was a good performance from him. And I don't think we're overrating Paul Felder or underrating Paul Felder. I think Paul Felder's a good guy. He doesn't have all that many fights. I mean, this was, what, fourth fight in the UFC? He's going to get experience. He's been in some tough wars against top guys in the division. He's going to get better from here. I'd like to see him rebound and fight a guy like Michael Chiesa, someone who's a lot lower than him, who probably can't take him down, can't stand
him. And who he can probably really control or be better than on the feet.
Yeah, and if you lose
to
a
guy like, really shine against a guy like that.
Yeah, and if you lose to Michael Chiesa, well, then you know what? We did overrate him. But at the same time, I mean, that is a competitive fight that both guys could benefit huge from. If you're a Ross Pearson, it's like you got two options if you're Ross Pearson. Option number one, the fans know I can't wrestle. I got completely dummied here by Evan Dunham in an awful fight. Okay, I can fight a guy like Jim Miller and try to rectify that situation. Jim Miller is ranked highly. He's got a good name. I can beat him standing. If I can stuff those takedowns and beat Jim Miller, then I can rectify that, show people, hey, maybe I am a contender and move on from that. If you can't wrestle, and chances are you probably can't, then why not fight a guy like Brazilian cowboy Alex Oliveira, who's coming back down to 155 pounds? Because you've got two options if you're him. I'm either going to take the explosive, fast-paced, exciting stand-up wars, or I'm going to try to fight the best guys in the division. And the best guys in the division are likely going to try to take me down. Felder didn't try to take me now. It played right into my hand. But other guys are going to. So I think this is a good win for Ross Pearson. I think he moves on. I definitely don't want to see a rematch in this for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. And then who knows if I want to see a trilogy. So I don't know where he's getting that from. But at the same time, it was fun enough. It was fine. Good job for Ross Pearson. And his career will progress nicely from this. You've got Felder still young. He'll be okay.
All right, let's move on to the bantamweight division where John Lineker and Francisco Rivera. Ooh. Wow. Oh, that's all I can really say about this fight. These guys just shot out of a cannon. It was absolutely insanity. It ended up getting fight of the night. It begs the question a lot of the times where that ends up being fight of the night, but I believe it was, my stats are probably a little bit off on this, but I think there was 107 strikes thrown and 98 of them landed. So basically what the UFC is saying by giving that fight of the night is, we don't like striking defense. Nobody, like they were just standing in the pocket, throwing. And I thought in a fight like that, even though Lineker is a scrappy guy, and like this is, he likes getting in those types of wars, I thought that type of fight was going to favor Francisco Rivera, who was obviously bigger than him, has some real one-punch knockout power. But John Lineker, hands of stone, also proved that he had a chin of stone in this fight, able to eat some of those shots, and finishes off Rivera with the guillotine choke at 208 of round number one. What was your thoughts on this fight?
Going into the fight, I was one of the few, well, not one of the few, but I was one of the people that picked Francisco Rivera because I thought, geez, you know what? He is bigger. If they do get into a firefight, which they did, he'd be able to benefit. Mm-hmm. But you know, this is the beauty of hindsight. You can always look back and then pick out where you went wrong. And where I went wrong is that Francisco Rivera, great hands, amazing hands, has been knocked out before, has been dropped in the past, a little bit of an older fighter as well, and chin, good, but not brilliant. And boy, oh boy, does John Lineker have an absolutely brilliant gin on him. Like, he was taking mad shots. And not the kind of shots that hit you right flush there. The kind of shots that hit you, like, in the back of the ear and just completely throw off your equilibrium. He took those no problem. Like, he would literally, like, it would hit him, he would move his head, and he would just immediately fire back. Like, it was like, man, talk about a guy that can take a good shot. And basically, what it plays out to is if you stand with this guy, you could be in serious trouble, because knocking him out, that's quite the task. And if he hits you, then you're completely done. However, the fight was fast. The fight was furious. John Lineker gave away the blueprint to beating him in that fight, despite a good performance mm-hmm. and a guillotine win. Is that if you rewatch it, and I mean, it's so quick and it's fun to watch, why not rewatch it? Is that at one point, Francisco Rivera is rocked. He's hurt. His legs are shaky. He falls forward and still gets a takedown on John Lineker. John Lineker's takedown defense will eventually be his unraveling. It really will. And like with the Ian McCall fight, McCall takes him down. And then, you know, when you get McCall a little tired and you can stuff some takedowns, sure. But at 35, some of these guys,
well, we've seen
they're going to pony him down.
We've seen it with Lineker as well, even at 125 against Altepkin Oskalic. That was a fight that Oskalic
yeah.
with the threat of the wrestling, made it a lot closer of a fight than what you would really anticipate there. So, yeah, hands of stone. I'd like to see him have some more exciting fights at that 135 weight class. Keep him away from wrestlers.
Yeah.
Maybe continue to build this guy up for when he is ready to go back down to 125, because we're looking for contenders there. Stick around. More Five Rounds Today will be coming up as we break down the rest of the prelims of UFC 191. And we'll reach out. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. Paul Shaughnessy, Cody Saftick, filling in for John Ramdean and Robin Black. Let's get through the rest of the prelims here quickly. Raquel Pennington gets the rear naked choke victory at 458 of round number two over Jessica Andrade in the rematch that nobody really ever asked for. But Raquel Pennington, big win on her birthday nonetheless.
Yeah.
So good on Raquel Pennington. Any sort of direction for these two girls, or do you think this has halted their progress moving forward?
No, I think for Raquel Pennington, she was more or less a gatekeeper of the division. Because she's already lost to people like Kat Zingano and Holly Holm, she'll likely remain kind of in that position. But she's another fighter that keeps getting better, and there'll be good fights for her down the road. For Jessica Andrade, this is the exact reason why you really need to think about what you're doing when you take a fight short notice.
Mm-hmm.
She probably would have won this fight on a full camp.
She had already beaten Raquel Pennington before, yeah. So she didn't have to do this.
She didn't, but she had already won that first round, and it was a good first round. And then in this, actually, you know what? That's a lie. She probably didn't win the first round. She got four takedowns in the first round.
Yeah.
But every time she got the takedown, Raquel Pennington got up, and when Raquel Pennington did get up, she would hurt her. And her biggest demise here is that she faded. She faded. She got tired. She didn't have the will to just completely, like, power through on positions. And so even, like, the way she just falls very neatly, oh, I'll just fall conveniently into this choke, wasn't a great performance from her. It could have been on a full camp, but she just got to go back to the drawing board. She's young. She'll be back to the drawing board. Pennington, she'll move up the ladder.
Thiago Trotor gets a split decision nod over Clay Collard. And I think I hate to make things so simplistic, but the big difference in this fight was striking defense. Thiago Trotor more classic style, hands up, you know, trying to evade shots. Whereas Clay Collard, God love him, super exciting guy to watch, but the guy's hands are down at his waist. He's not upset with getting hit to deliver, or not upset to take two or three shots to land one, and that was really the difference at the end of the day in this fight.
Well, Joe Rogan claims at the beginning of the fight, he goes, Clay Collard's had 85 amateur boxing matches, and then Mike Goldberg adds in, and his grandfather started him in boxing at age 11. I guess the whole family, they fancy themselves boxers. It's like, my God, why does he leave his hands like that if he's, you know, such a vaunted boxer and of an mm-hmm. amateur pedigree? It's like nobody fights like that. But he's honestly the victim of the judges. I thought Clay Collard won the fight. I thought rounds one and two. I thought where Clay Collard round three was traitor. But the problem is that you've got three guys sitting cage side. Those are the people you need to impress. Mm-hmm. When you do stuff like you leave your hands down and you put your head out and he's doing that thing where he's like, he's tapping his leg. Like, go ahead, knee my leg. Yeah. When you're acting like a clown, okay, there's some judge out there that'll be like, oh, he's clowning him because nothing's hurting him. I got this round for him. There's another judge out there that says, this guy's a joke, and he's losing the fight.
And he's trying to convince me that he's winning this fight, even though by doing these antics. Anyway, we got to move on. We got your boy Joe Diesel Riggs. Maybe the strangest string of fights or period of time since he's come back to the to UFC. He ended up shooting himself. He had the loss to Ben Saunders when he went for like the suplex or whatever, hurt his shoulder. Now with this Ron Stallings fight, very, very strange. It looked like the damage that was done to his left eye happened in the first round, and then there was an upkick from Ron Stallings in that round number two. That didn't seem to be the strike that really pulled a halt to it, but it's what brought the doctor into the cage. He ends up winning by an illegal upkick. Now, he was winning in that second round, but definitely a strange turn of events there. I'm sure if Stallings wanted to dispute this to the commission, he definitely has a case to be laid here. I don't know if he's going to even bother going through and doing that, but quick thoughts on that fight.
Yeah, he's had a weird career in general. He's fought a man in a hospital after fighting somebody. He's shot himself. He hurt himself against Ben Saunders. He hurt himself against Corey DeVella. He hurt himself in this one. It was the jab. No doubt about it, the jab got him. Now, if you ask Joe Riggs, he says, well, it was a bit of a finger poke within that jab. Sorry. But what it comes down to is that he's winning the second round. It is an illegal upkick. You can't just be like, oh, Joe, maybe no contest, sure, but for the people that are out there, they're saying Joe Riggs should have just lost it with a TKO because he couldn't continue. It was the upkick. Don't get me wrong. He couldn't see through the eye anyways. But the heel misses, gets him in the jaw. It slips up. The side of the foot, not the heel, the side of the foot scrapes up. And this is hamburger meat at this point. Is it done? And that's the straw that breaks the camel back, right? If you want to redo the fight, do it, right? Stallings had a good first round, although not a great first round, and he was getting beat up pretty badly in the second. So Joe Riggs, my boy, we just got to throw a little more diesel in the tank and then on to the next one.
All right, interesting to see what the next one for Joe Diesel Riggs is. Stick around. Coming up, we'll break down the big press conference from the UFC Go Big, where it was basically the Conor McGregor show, so break out your red panties. Welcome back to Five Rounds Today. Paul Shaughnessy and Cody Saftick here with you. Well, the big press conference went down, and there were a few people up there, hardly even had any questions asked them. It turned into the McGregor show, let's be honest. Anytime they do one of these events, it seems Conor McGregor takes advantage of the spotlight, and boy did he ever in this one. He basically was calling out anybody who was within 15, 20 pounds of him. Him and Cowboy were getting at it. Him and Rafael Dos Anjos were getting at it. Chad Mendes was taking some heat. Well, do you like this type of stuff? I love it myself. Anybody who knows me knows I'm a big Conor McGregor fan, so I enjoy it. I think it hypes up the fight. It's a lot of fun. The guy's a wizard on the mic. But I can understand the other side of the spectrum, that this guy's basically just crapping all over every other division and just making himself look good. What was your takeaways from this?
Yeah, not a big fan of it personally. I mean, I could most definitely see the entertainment side of it. And I am a Conor McGregor fan, so it's not like I dislike him. But he definitely went full heel in this, and he was really teetering that line of going over the edge and jumping the shark, right? And I think this was the exact moment where he did just that. I mean, his bit with the red panties, it's funny. But then he brings it up a second time, and then it's like, okay, maybe it's just a rehearsed line. I don't know. And, mm-hmm. he's got these rehearsed lines like stick in the mud or red panties. And to his credit, he'll change them and he'll never use them again.
Yeah.
But in the moment, it's like, okay, I got three lines that I'm just going to throw out, and that's what I'm going to throw out here. I didn't like how the UFC was like, we're going to get all of our biggest stars. We're going to put them all on the same stage, and we're going to have them bicker at each other like a couple high school kids, you know? Like, it was embarrassing. It was borderline embarrassing. You've got – I felt bad for Chad Mendes because of the whole Donald Cerrone saying never fight thing. But worse than that, I felt bad for Holly Holm, who's sitting next to Conor McGregor and had to listen to that rubbish about red panties and stuff. Like, that's degrading to her, man. Mm-hmm. She's a world champion. You've got a stage full of world champions, and you're using this moment to feel – and it wasn't questions from reporters. It was fan questions and crap. Like, it just – it wasn't set up well. I could see the entertainment side of it, and I have friends that really much enjoyed it. And if you take the highlights of it and you play just like the three best minutes of it, it's funny. But when you factor in that this was over an hour long, it wasn't funny. It was annoying.
It was borderline uncomfortable. Really, it was pretty uncomfortable
by the end of it. It got way too much for me, and just not a fan, to be honest.
I imagine the UFC spends a lot of money on putting this all together. I wonder how much of a benefit that they get out of this. Let's be honest. I don't think they were going to have a problem selling pay-per-views for UFC 194 anyway. It's probably the best card, at least in modern era, that they've ever had. You've got Conor McGregor versus Jose Aldo, if Aldo shows up, as Conor would say. And then in the co-main event, you've got one of the best fights coming up as well with Chris Weidman and Luke Rockhold. I understand the concept of let's get him up there, but when Conor steals the whole spotlight, nobody really cares about what's going on with Joe Duffy or Dustin Poirier or Roy Nelson and Josh Barnett. It's like, did it really promote them? You flew these guys from, well, maybe not Roy Nelson, but you flew these people all over the place.
Like,
and did it really hype up those fights? Does it really make sure that more people are going to tune into those fights? I'm not so sure.
No, I think you just nailed it. Not only do you spend all the money bringing the people in, but at the same time, it's like a lot of these people got fights coming up, and they're focused on other things, and you're telling them, like, oh, we're having this big press conference. And how many of those people walked away from that press conference being like, I had a good day today? Like, none of them. Like, it wasn't a good day for anybody other than Conor McGregor. He was the one guy that stole the spotlight. Remember when they did that Aldo versus Conor McGregor media tour, and they went to all the different cities? That was enjoyable because it was McGregor and it was Aldo, and it was them boosting their own ticket sales and getting into it. I didn't like to see
him on
stage.
I think that costs way too much money. It's a lot cheaper to bring everybody into one spot, though.
Yes, fair enough. But could you not save money by being like, oh, geez, we're not going to fly these guys down. We're not going to bring all of these people in from different areas. I mean, where was Joseph Duffy? Was he in Montreal? Okay, let's get his flight from here. Okay, where's Poirier? Well, he's from South Florida. Okay, let's bring him here. We got a couple guys in Vegas. And, you know, where's this guy? Well, he's actually in Japan right now. Like, geez, I mean, that was a lot of money just to have McGregor crap on it. Why not just give him another six-part special like they did the last time? Like, I don't care.
Well, there will be.
He's funny. Don't get me wrong.
Maybe there will be a 12-part
special. Thought that this was like a tad bit classless, and even the way they set it up with Cerrone right behind him and Mendes right next to Cerrone, like the whole thing was just
love this type of thing. I like the more McGregor can sell for other
Fair
people
enough.
the better. It's not everybody's cup of tea, but it is mine. Want to thank Cody Saftick breaking down UFC 191 with me. Want to thank our producer, Chase Kaiser, breaking it all down with us as well. Remember, John Robin will be back next Monday for 5 rounds, and they'll get you all ready for upcoming fights and all that good stuff. So, Cody Saftick, I'm Paul Shaughnessy saying thanks for tuning in.